This is a production of Cornell University.
Which is open to all graduate students, offers added value for students from diverse backgrounds through intensive three-day immersions in theory and skills related to leadership. I want to emphasize how important this is. Leadership skills will be important to you no matter what career you embark on once you graduate from Cornell. Another element of diversity that I think we want to celebrate and support are graduate and professional students with families. They contribute diverse perspectives, and they're an important group of students. Today, I am pleased to announce, recognizing the challenges that our students with faculty face, we are more than doubling the funds available for student child care grants. We're going to raise the annual budget from $100,000 to $250,000. We will be able to increase the maximum award as well as our ability to support more students. Second, my team and I are committed to working with the GPSA and other partners to create an inclusive and rewarding Cornell graduate and professional student living environment. Most immediately, I am working now with my team, but in particular Vice President Lombardi and Vice President Hugh Wang of our infrastructure group, to work on critical housing needs. As you know, the Maplewood Park apartment complex is closing next July at the end of the academic year. We really have no choice in that. The state of the housing is simply unacceptable and has to be replaced. We already have plans underway for the university to collaborate with private partners to develop appropriate housing, graduate students focused, at the Maplewood site, and to develop additional housing in the new East Hill Village. This will include more housing and more amenities for our graduate student populations. Your survey responses helped inform our efforts, and we are going to ask for your participation as we go forward in this important project. I also have learned, as I've gotten more to know more about Cornell and your experience, that there were a number of questions a year ago about workers' compensation coverage for graduate students. The university has made it a priority in terms of institutional resources and administrative attention to satisfy concerns about workers' compensation coverage for graduate student assistants who are injured while engaged in activities on the university's behalf. If a graduate student is injured at Cornell and that injury meets the New York State workers' compensation eligibility requirements, that student will be covered by workers' compensation. Third, the university will continue to focus on supporting doctoral students' academic success and timely degree completion to further improve on the very positive statistics I mentioned at the outset of my remarks. We have expanded the number of university fellowships provided to doctoral students. In 2014-15, Cornell's graduate fellowships will provide more than $25 million in stipends, tuition, and student health insurance. We also, as you know, have a generous research and conference travel grant program, and I hope you take advantage of that. I'm also aware of the concerns this group expressed, good concerns, I think, about the implementation of two different minimum assistantship stipend rates in response to some faculty concerns about declining external funding. I share your concern. So I am pleased to announce that beginning now, this semester, we are returning to a single required minimum assistantship stipend rate for teaching and research assistantships. That between the assistantship stipend rates for teaching assistants and research assistants, increasing the research assistantship stipend minimum to be the equivalent of the teaching assistantship minimum. Because applying for external fellowships is a significant professional development opportunity for students and one that we are enormously proud of when you do and you succeed, we are enhancing fellowship awards that students receive from outside sources if they are somewhat less than Cornell's usual amounts. You should not be penalized when you secure funding from external sources. We should celebrate that success with you, and we intend to. We are also taking measures to ensure timely degree completion. We've heard your concern about reduced tuition level for self-paid doctoral students in their sixth and seventh years who are striving to complete their degree programs. Effective immediately this semester, the reduced tuition is now $3,500 per year, a significant programs that support professional development and help graduate students across all disciplines build core competencies to build for a variety of careers. We're going to move forward on several fronts on this professionalism level. Last year, the graduate school offered more than 1,900 hours of professional development programming to promote academic success and career development, including more than 500 hours of writing support at events such as thesis and dissertation writing boot camps, writer retreats, and daily writings at the Big Red Barn, peer consultantships, and fellowships during workshops. These events help students garner external competitive funding, such as the prestigious MSF Graduate Research Fellowship, and to develop writing support groups among peers. We will continue those important efforts, and I encourage you and your colleagues to take advantage of these resources. As you know, writing is a key to your success. Writing for external funding, no matter your discipline, is a key to your success. And these are years where you can really develop those skills with the mentorship of faculty and peers who have gone forward. We know from self-reported data that half of Cornell PhD graduate students attain an academic position. The other half enters careers in business, government, nonprofit sector, and other spheres. Graduate school should prepare you for whatever path you choose. I'm strongly committed to supporting career development pathways for graduate students, both inside and outside academia, and I believe we have a strong foundation for increasing these pathways. To prepare graduate students and postdocs seeking academic faculty careers, Cornell is one of 21 member schools in the National Center for the Integration of Research, Teaching, and Learning, which is committed to preparing a talented future professoriate focused on effective undergraduate learning and research mentorship. Through the center, we offer workshops on academic job searches, grants to support new learning community initiatives, and an online teaching community for graduate students and postdocs interested in careers that emphasize teaching in higher education and certification as an associate, practitioner, or scholar of teaching in higher education. We will continue that work. To help prepare graduate students for multiple careers, Cornell Career Services, the Graduate School, and college and graduate offices across campus provide networking, counseling about career options, and a number of non-academic career workshops and events. I'm particularly sympathetic to these efforts. My own background, as some of you may know, was one that has entered a lot of different environments before I went into teaching, including public service at various levels, and earning teaching only seven years after I received my doctorate in law. In addition, students can participate in the versatile PhD online community, which highlights career options outside the academy for humanities, social science, and STEM fields, and provides opportunities to network and ask career advice from other PhD degree holders. We're also participating in a program funded by the NIH, Broadening Experiences in Scientific Training, the BEST program. The Cornell BEST program is flexible, customized, and experiential. It will help graduate fields in the graduate school determine the types of experiences that are most effective in supporting the needs of PhDs pursuing multiple career paths with specific opportunities in science communication, science policy, entrepreneurship, and management. The graduate school and several colleges have contributed additional resources to expand the BEST program to give graduate school students in all STEM disciplines opportunities to explore multiple career options for PhDs. There's another way I think that the Cornell community can help you, and that's through our vibrant and successful alumni community. Alumni can be immensely helpful in helping students explore career options. As I've traveled the country and indeed the world meeting alumni, one thing I'm very impressed by is how many of our PhD graduates remain very committed and engaged alumni, and how many who have other kinds of graduate degrees want to form a network of support for our students. Going forward, we will devote additional funding to support student engagement with alumni, including during alumni reunion weekend and through targeted seminars and workshops and formal networking events. We've already expanded opportunities for our women students to interact with our outstanding Cornell alumni in partnership with the President's Council of Cornell Women, and we are developing other opportunities led here by Vice President Joel Molina, who's here, and Vice President Lombardi, for graduate and professional students to establish meaningful interactions with Cornell trustees, gain career insights from them, and in turn, enhance the trustees' understanding of the graduate student experience at Cornell. Now, while we will continue to work hard to enhance this tremendous educational experience for our graduate and professional students, we need your help. We need you to take advantage of these opportunities, opportunities we have offered in the past and we will offer new now and continue to offer in the future. We need your feedback on how we can improve or strengthen those opportunities. We need you to help spread the word to your colleagues to do the same. We need to know what's working, what can be improved, what we should do less of, what we should do more of. We need your continued engagement in the strategic plan you developed in 2013 and in developing your strategic vision for the next 5 years. Indeed, the university later this fall will embark on a strategic vision project to think about the next 10 years for Cornell University, led by Provost Kotlikoff, and we need your engagement in that endeavor to help us shape what this university will be for higher education and for society over the next decade. Our educational experience, characterized by a collaboration between faculty and graduate students and among graduate students, works best when we are all active participants. And finally, particularly because this is the first time I've addressed you, I want to stress that we remain committed to meaningful shared governance. Of the 11 Ivy Plus schools, 7 have no voting members in graduate school governance. By contrast, at Cornell, at the end of last academic year, the General Committee of the Graduate School voted to change their 2 non-voting graduate student positions into voting members. This is in addition to the graduate student representative on the Cornell Board of Trustees, and of course, to the GCSA itself, which has been and will remain a vital partner in our shared commitment to achieve academic excellence in all that we do, including the graduate and professional student experience. I encourage the GPSA leadership to continue to meet regularly with Dean Newt, who will be a wonderful liaison for us, and to invite university leadership to meetings to discuss issues with you. In addition, I will be meeting with the leadership of the GPSA, and I think we already have a meeting scheduled. I look forward to regular interaction with you throughout my presidency. And in the time we have left tonight, I'm more than happy to hear your questions, comments. I've got a team of people here to help me answer anything I don't know the answer to. But in the end, what I want you to hear from me is that your educational experience here is important to us. What you will hear from me as president is that my entire focus is on academic excellence. We want to be the leading university of the 21st century. And the way that we do that is to continue to have one of the best graduate and professional students' experiences in the country, but to enhance that, to learn from each other, to work together. The educational experience of a graduate student and the faculty is one of the most special experiences that anyone really enjoys in a university setting. And we appreciate your partnership with us to ensure that that experience reaches the heights of academic excellence. Thank you. So as I said, I'm happy to answer questions. Yes.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about workers' compensation, particularly what sort of organs would be dealing with that, considering it's a new project. And specifically, also, what the dimensions of how that would deal with mental health, essentially.
So I think most of that is defined by the state law on workers' compensation. I refer to Joel, can you help with that?
Not in any more detail.
Bart? So
the New York State Workers' Compensation Board ultimately determines the criteria by which an injury that occurs when you're doing activities on behalf of the university would be considered for workers' compensation or not. So what we're saying is that if that decision is made by the board for New York under New York State guidelines, that we will then make sure that that student is duly compensated with workers' compensation benefits.
I guess my question is just how would that liaison happen if we're not considered workers?
So what happens, and if you look on the graduate school website, there's a link to the process to follow if a graduate student is injured. Process starts by you, who's injured, or somebody for you, filing a report with the Environmental Health and Safety, and that kicks in the process for moving into the workers' compensation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm a 6-year PhD student. I've had the privilege to spend quite a bit of time here, and for all of the reasons you mentioned, it's a really great university.
What are you studying?
I'm in development sociology.
Mm-hmm.
On the department we have here. And all these initiatives you announced, I think, are very refreshing for your commitment to graduate education. But as you know, universities are under attack all over the country by, we hear about California state schools and there are all kinds of budget concerns. But really, relating more to private universities, I'm sure you're familiar, probably, there's a great article about that in the New York Times on August 19th called Stop Universities from Forking Money, by a law professor in San Diego.
He's married to one of my former students, Victor Quite. I know Victor well. I was a tax lawyer for some time, yes.
Fantastic. And it was a wonderful article, I thought.
Well, we can disagree about that, but it was intriguing.
Victor had an interesting thought experiment there.
Okay, well, that kind of leads to my question then. His main point, he expressed a great deal of concern about what we would consider peer institutions, from Yale, Harvard, Stanford, and a number of other new books, identifying concerns about private equity fund managers and management fees actually receiving more from the university endowments annually than said university spending on its students. Since we hear so much about the budget in the GPSA and what there is or isn't room for in the budget, I was just wondering if you might share, it sounds like you do have some reactions to
You know, I think a strength of a private institution is an endowment. An endowment is a financial commitment by donors throughout the decades, the centuries, to the durability and the vision of an institution of higher education. Much of the endowment is not unrestricted, right? Typically, endowment comes from donors who actually say how they want the money from that endowment to be spent. Our endowment, I think, is actually relatively small for an institution of our size and an institution of our quality. Our endowment is around $6 billion, and so it's not really at the level of the kinds of endowments that the article was talking about, but it is one of the top endowments in the country. It's just I wish it were bigger. Why do I wish it were bigger? Because it can fund, in perpetuity, things that are extraordinarily important for a university. It is a generator of funds for student scholarships. It can be a generator of funds for faculty, research, endowed professorships, and the like. So one of the things I'm hoping to do as president is to talk with more of our alumni and to convince them to make more gifts of endowment, targeted to scholarships at the graduate and undergraduate levels and targeted to support of our faculty. I think that's enormously important. It gives us a stability that I think is commensurate with our durability. Victor's point about the payment of fees versus the payout of the endowment differs for every institution. Each institution has very different kinds of fees. Certainly we work to maximize the return on the endowment at the lowest cost that is possible, but there's a market that determines how much you pay for that kind of investment advice, and one wants the very best investment advice that one can get. We're certainly not in the range, I would imagine, of any of the schools that he talked about. We also want to have a robust, I don't know the figures to be honest, we also want to have a robust payout. Typically what a university tries to do is to pay out between 4% and 6% of the endowment. That's true no matter how the endowment is performing. So even if the endowment performs less, you try to pay out between 4% and 6% even if it does better. Why? Because what you're trying to do is to smooth across years. So you do 4% to 6% of a rolling 3-year average in an attempt to make sure that people know this is a relatively steady source of income. And what's interesting is that even when endowments fell and when returns fell, Cornell and many others continue to pay at that rate, which is exactly what you're supposed to do. It's a smoothing function. I think it's very important to pay at about that level because donors anticipate that the endowment principle will last forever. They also anticipate that the endowment will have
effect in each current year. And I think that is typically a pretty good way to do it. The federal law has no requirement on payout for university endowments. There are some requirements with nonprofit foundations. It's about a 5% payout. So we're in essentially that 4 to 6% area is about the same. Other institutions have paid out less. I think Cornell has tended to pay in that area. You also have to make sure that those people who give you endowment believe that you're going to get a return on their money that justifies that investment. So again, you want to have an endowment that grows over time and that is sufficient to support a payout over time. So we will continue to try to grow endowment. We will try to grow it to support student scholarships at the graduate and undergraduate level and to support faculty endowment. That can be chairs, professorships. It can also be research for institutes and the like. One of the things I would like to focus on, to be honest, is PhD fellowships. There are a number of institutions that have done a very good job at doing that. Stanford is one that has been able to raise quite a bit of endowment for fellowships. I think Cornell does better than average, both for PhD fellowships and for postdoc fellowships. But that's one of the themes that I'm going to be sounding quite a bit when I'm out in the community talking about the importance of an investment in Cornell.
Sure. I just want to brief follow-up, sorry. What do you think would be an appropriate forum for those who might have more specific? And that's a very thorough answer. Thank you. For those who, so this is kind of a national discussion, for those who might have more specific concerns about the fund, where would be an appropriate forum?
Well, there are actually a lot of interesting ideas being talked about now with respect to endowments. I think Victor's is one of the ones that I think was posed at a level that got it published in the New York Times and that started a lot of conversations. That's what professors are about. And so I applaud my colleague Victor for starting a conversation with who I don't agree with him. I think this is a good environment to do it. Well, that's what academics is all about, right? It's putting out ideas, even if you don't agree with them, and debating them. So I'm all for that. But we have an investment committee, and so one thing you can do is to send your thoughts there. We have an investment, a chief investment officer, AJ, who I think has talked to you in the past, Joanne DiStefano, our chief financial officer, or people who can talk through some of those issues. And you know, we'd be certainly happy to engage in the dialogue if we have on some of the issues surrounding the investment, as I understand it, in past years. Yeah.
So I try to follow up with Paul's question. I'm also a member of the GPSA, who's like a former exec member. I've been around for also about 5 years. I was so happy to hear that you've been addressing so many of the concerns that you've been working on for the past 2 years about shorter conversation, childcare grants. And I was just wondering, following a resolution that we had from a couple of years ago on the topic of endowment, if there's going to be any reconsideration about deducting from fossil fuels. So we had put together quite a bit, and all the assemblies did pass a resolution with regard, and when Gordon came to address us, he agreed with all the points, but at the moment, I believe that that 3 year, Cornell's only just breaking even by the very amount that the fossil fuel investments themselves are worth, and I was wondering if you have any thoughts on that, or if there might be any further reconsideration about the deficit.
So I have met with leaders of all of the constituency groups, as you say, each one of them has passed a resolution, and that makes it a very unusual question with regard to the endowment. There are sometimes questions raised with endowment, but it is unusual to have all the constituency groups speaking with one voice. And because of that, we have invited that group to address the Board of Trustees in October and to share with the board their concerns. It is the board and the investment committee that make those kinds of decisions. However, I've also been very upfront with them, and I will be so with you, that I do not support divestment of fossil fuels in our endowment. And there are two reasons for that. One is, and this goes back to one of the answers that I gave to the last question, I think my fiduciary duty as a trustee of this university, and I am a trustee, is to maximize the returns on the endowment. And it is my view, given the social science research and other analysis that I have seen, that divesting would reduce the return on our endowment in a way that would impair our financial health. And I do not think that is a responsible thing to do, and I do not think it is in accord with the wishes of the donors or my fiduciary duty as a trustee. I also think we have to be very careful. There are lots of policy issues we all care very strongly about, and I share your commitment to working as a university, to be a leader in issues of sustainability and renewable energy. We can uniquely play that role because of our history and because of our characteristics. But there are a lot of policy issues that you and I may feel strongly about. We cannot have every policy issue that a lot of us feel strongly about dictate the investment of our endowment. And so I think that it sets a precedent that I don't believe is a wise one to set in this instance. Now, again, that's a decision that the Board of Trustees and the Investment Committee will make, so the group that is making that presentation to the Board will have their opportunity to make their arguments, which I believe rest not just on the policy view, but they also argue that this might be in the financial interests of the university, and I think they ought to be able to make those arguments to the trustees. You're welcome. Yes.
Thanks for coming to speak to us today. Mm-hmm. Starting this year, there's been quite a significant change in the way healthcare is administered at Cornell, and I wanted to hear from you that alongside all the changes that are going on at Gannett, if there are initiatives underway to address specifically the accessibility needs of graduate and professional students.
It's very early. But I would say we are looking carefully at the health bill, the health state, and we're looking at how we can harmonize that that fee across all of the student population. So, you know, we have students that pay for the Cornell Health Service, and we have students that opt out of that. And we treat those populations a little differently with the, in this single instance, in the health fee. So what we're looking at, and I think we'll decide over the next couple of months, is whether we can treat those populations equivalently. And so I'll be talking a little bit more about that. But in answer to your question, Xander, we will be looking at that very carefully.
Well, I also know there's been an issue about how our health fee interacts with the Affordable Care Act. There's some unclarity in the Affordable Care Act. The health plan interacts with the Affordable Care Act. There's some unclarity there about graduate health plans in the Affordable Care Act. My own sense from talking to people in Washington is that that's under attention, and to the extent that there can be some tweaks made in the ACA, that's one that might be considered. But it is the case that we will continue to offer the student health plan to graduate students awarded assistantships and fellowships, providing SHP as part of that award. But I'm hoping that we'll also have some action in Washington.
Okay.
Hi there, thank you for joining us today. And I'm glad the administration addressed the issue of pay differential. What assurances do we have that that won't happen in the future, that you won't arbitrarily change?
Well, I try never to do anything arbitrarily. I think that's not a good idea. Well, if I also want to do anything, that affects hear me say that I do not support a differential education at one stipend. That was a request that I made. It was one that Barb and her team quickly and enthusiastically supported, and we have that underway effective this semester, and I do not anticipate changes.
So I think we have time for just one more question.
Okay,
Nate, do you want to ask a question?
I'm really happy you touched on all these issues and been willing to share so much information, especially about the university endowment. One concern that I have with the implementation of the budget model over the past couple of years has been the emphasis on bringing new streams, unrestricted revenue streams, I guess, into the university. And one way in which this works is through the implementation and creation of professional master's programs or one-year master's programs that students pay for. So I guess my sort of concern with this is the way this is enabled is particularly by the way that student loan structures work right now, that there's a kind of unlimited amount of student loan money out there that the university is then basically bankrolling itself through. And I think it'd be unfair, for example, to have the kind of implementation of these one-year master's programs in the humanities, for example, in a way for departments to bring in revenue, for the humanities departments to bring in revenue, particularly just because on the one hand, humanities departments are costing the university that much in the first place, and on the other hand, just because of the ethics of that money issue that's going on. So I'm wondering to what extent we're still chugging forward and chugging along with these debt financed master's programs?
So there's a lot in that question, so I'm sorry. One question, and like it hits so much of higher education. Well, we need to take a stab, and I know that the provost is dealing with a lot of these issues with more aggressive choice. You began by talking about the budget model as a driver for the search for more unrestricted money. I think you've got to disentangle some things. The budget model is a way of understanding and expressing the budget. I don't think it's fair to say that it has caused there to be a focus on the need for the university to bring in more sources of revenue. What causes the university to think about that is that we never had enough resources to do all of the great things that we want to do and that we know we can do here at Cornell. And so, for example, as president, much of my time is out on the road bringing in philanthropy, and to the extent possible, unrestricted, or to support those academic priorities that we've identified. So what the budget model actually does is, I think, it illuminates where funds are flowing, and we're working, and the provost is actually working very diligently on making it more transparent and more understandable, because in fairness, as it's been implemented so far, it's not the most transparent thing in the world, but it's better than what we have. But, you know, that's how we work. We work incrementally, we're working to be, I think we're going to have a lot of good work this year that will make it even more transparent. And I do think that it points out, and one of the things it tries to do is to incentivize deans and schools to think about possibilities for enhanced revenue that are consistent with our academic mission and that are always at the top of academic excellence. And I guess that's where I would go to next. And that is, I think, actually, one of the promises of higher education is to think about other ways that we can train people for the workforce of tomorrow. Increasingly, our undergraduates are going to be going into a variety of graduate programs. Some will go into a JD program, like I did. Some will go into a PhD program. But increasingly, there are often shorter, but not necessarily master's programs that are new, that are targeted, and that bring real value to the student taking it, to the university offering it, and to the society at large. And to the extent that Cornell can produce those kinds of master's programs or professional doctorate programs, we are going to think about doing that. There's one right now in IOR that is very successful. We've got a number of them at Cornell Tech that I think is going to revolutionize the way we think about some master's programs. So I think we've got to be very careful not tarring all shortened master's programs with the same brush. And I think at Cornell, we are going to ensure that the ones we put into place are ones that are consistent with academic excellence, with our mission, and who we are. Edward Cornell's motto, in some ways, I think, can be reflected in very promising ways through such excellent professional master's programs. Now, that isn't going to be the answer for every discipline. You know, there are going to be master's programs that are considered, and in some disciplines, they simply aren't going to make sense. There's not a market for them. There isn't value that can be added to all of those diverse constituencies. And when that happens, we're not going to pursue them. That's not, you know, we don't do anything just to raise money. All we do is first and foremost focus on academic excellence. But the final thing I would say, and then Mike can ask anything he wants, I do think we all have to be aware that when we talk about the debt crisis in this country, although it can be serious for undergraduate students, the reality is that our undergraduates, and most undergraduates at top elite research universities, graduate with manageable levels of debt, and they graduate. Right, they graduate with around $21,000 of debt, and they graduate at a 93% rate. That is an enormous value for that investment. That's an investment anybody would be well advised to make. Where we are seeing an explosion of debt is in two areas. One is the for-profit schools, and I think the government is finally dealing with that to some extent. The other, as you say, is in the graduate programs, partly because federal funding changed to make funding more available to graduate students. There aren't the same guards against excessive debt that we have in some of the undergraduate aspects, et cetera. So one of the things I'm going to be talking about with our presidential council and our alumni over the course of the next few months is we need to really focus on support for our graduate students. A law student, not here, but nationally, graduates with $140,000 of debt. An MD graduates with $162,000 of debt. Now, there are lots of ways we can think about that. Scholarship for one, thinking about career options, make sure that people have employment when they graduate, which I think we do better than almost anybody else. Another thing I think we have to do is to think about programs so that if you do graduate with graduate debt, many of us, certainly I did when I left law school, is to think about how do we have programs that might ameliorate the cost of that debt so that people's choices are not limited. You don't feel like you have to, in my case, go into a big law firm, but as I did, you can go into the federal government and have a do public service. So I think there are lots of different answers for a place like Cornell. I don't think that the problem you've identified is one that Cornell is contributing to, because I do think that we keep our focus on academic excellence and on yielding value, but I think we have to be concerned about graduate debt. Mike, you
want to
ask?
Well, maybe just how can we follow up with an excellent but a little color. I mean, I'm going around and really talking about our budget deficit and our budget model to a lot of faculty and departments. And those two things are often conflated. Our budget model does not cause our budget deficit. We had that budget deficit before this current budget model, and that budget model doesn't decrease our revenue, and it doesn't add cost. All it does is analyze and attribute where that deficit is coming from. I guess the one thing I could offer to this group is perhaps to come back and talk a little bit about where we are financially. I think that might be educational for graduate and professional students. What we're thinking about, what our plans are, what our goals are with this budget model.
We're talking about to everybody.
I think that would be valuable also to the previous question about what role our endowment plays in that, in our overall budget. So I'd be glad to offer to do that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know we've taken up more of your time, so I appreciate your indulgence. I have to get to a law faculty dinner, so I am going to scoot out of that phone.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So thank you again, Elizabeth Garrett, for coming. And so now we'll move on to the next item of our agenda, which is approval of the minutes from our final meeting in the spring of 2015, which were distributed at the start of this meeting. Were there any corrections or alterations to the minutes? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes? Is there a second? All right. Then we will approve the minutes by unanimous consent. Unanimous consent simply means that you vote yes by not saying no. So, is there anyone opposed to approving the minutes? Hearing no opposition, the minutes are approved. So, from there, we'll go into reports of officers and committee updates. So, I know this is the first meeting of the year, and a lot of the committees haven't had a chance to meet yet. So what we're looking for now is sort of just maybe an overview of what your committee does for the benefit of our newer members, a brief overview, and just any major plans you have for the upcoming year. So, for the executive committee, Teja.
Hi, I'm Teja. Technically, the executive committee is the three of us and a council, with the position is vacant now. So, probably of all the committees, we've had to work through the summer, so I don't envy that job. But anyway, okay. So, one of the big changes that we're going to be doing, and has been presented to you in resolution form, is be adding a fourth person to share in our misery, to work with us through the summer. The new position will be called the Vice President of Communication. Originally, the position was that that this person was the chair of the communication committee. They're going to continue to be the chair of the communication committee, but this person will now be elected, and they'll be elected to the executive committee. What this would do, we are hoping, is make communication between the executive committee and the GPSA membership more, accessible. So that we can, before the problem was the chair of the communication committee didn't quite know all the specific policies that we were involved with. Like, for example, a lot of the things that you heard about is today from President Beth Garrett we've been talking about that for a while. We've been proposing policy alternatives, and we don't think that the information has been quite getting through to the rest of the GPSA membership. So hopefully that particular position will help that happen.
Anything else? Okay. All right. So thank you, Teja. So next up is operations.
I'll stand up, and I'll try to keep brief because I think I've spammed everyone like so much by now. I've been working hard with the Office of Assemblies. They've been working really hard to try and straighten some of these things out. I think our our usual problem every year is that we always can't quite staff all of our external and sometimes even our internal standing committee assignments. In fact, we've even just been trying hard to get a handle on how many there are out there in the university, because Cornell being so decentralized, it can be kind of tough just to get your head around that. So we're getting close to a pretty final list of something like 68 or so external committee positions, and there's an equal number, if not a little bit more, internal positions that are available. So basically, my expectations now, in the past, you can come in as a field rep, you can kind of sit, you can listen to the meetings and listen to the president talk, and it's all been great. But the kind of the eyes and ears and the hands and feet of GTSA are in these external committees and in the internal committees. And so the expectation this year is I would like everyone to get involved in at least a one, potentially both committees. I've been talking with the committee chair. So the operations and staffing committee is a little weird in that it's only made up of the two UA reps. So raise your hand if you're UA rep, Alex. Catherine, I don't see Catherine. So we have two of those. We also have all of our committee chairs, and there's two vacancies right now. The new, if we have a VP of communications, that would be one. If you're a committee chair, raise your hand. These people, Hong's also not here, and a couple
of them. Is
it here?
I'm fine.
Okay, maybe not. So it's only made up of committee chairs, the two UA reps, and Tasia and I. And so we're just trying to staff all these committees. That's basically all we do. But I really need you guys to find something to get involved in. I'll be presenting later on, not at this meeting because it's so full, but at future meetings about what to get involved in or what's available. You can definitely come and talk to me afterwards. There's everything from, you know, you only meet once a semester for pizza at like some place and chat with some people, and to stuff that you work almost every week. And so we can find something that fits you, I promise you. But please, please don't let this opportunity go by. And question?
Would it be possible, if we're going to talk about staffing the committees at the next meeting, would it be possible for you to circulate a list of those committees beforehand?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I'll be circulating a list. Some of them I don't have a lot of information for because some of them haven't been staffed in years. So some of them is just... Right. And this is a problem when we talk to the administration, right? So if we talk to them and we say, hey, we want to do... we're concerned about this particular issue. And they say, oh, well, we've had this council that has been staffed by graduate students in 5 years. That's a problem because it kind of diminishes our voice a bit. So I will be circulating a list of the different committees, and the information that I have I will send out. And I'm trying to get a list of the people who have staffed with committees before to get information from them, what they are. There'll be these things called the committee data sheets. They're like one page long and tells you all kinds of stuff. Question?
Question. I'm just thinking out loud, hearing about this. I'm wondering if some of these committees haven't been staffed for 5 years, is that maybe an indication that maybe they're not necessary for us to move on?
That's going to be a thing. And there's a discussion, too, because there's always, even over the summer, there was talk about maybe creating a couple of new committees, and people always want a couple of graduate students on their committee. And I think we need to evaluate the process. When we're already at 50 positions, and they're already so hard to fill, do we really need to be staffing some of these, or can some of these be combined? That's a conversation when we get to the GPCI stuff. We'll talk about as well. So... but the most pressing thing on that is I got an urgent email today saying that we need to staff the CJC, the Campus Judicial Committee, something on that
Codes
line.
Codes and Judicial.
Yeah.
Codes and Judicial.
So normally what we do is we approve a slate of appointments like at the second meeting of the year, but they want to start working on policy decisions from all the way from the top, like now. Yeah?
Yes.
You'd like to do that? And you talk to me afterwards. Okay? And I think we have two positions for that, if I memory serves me correctly. But I will check my spreadsheet later. So just come up and talk to me after if that's something that interests you, or any other position, or you want to call dibs on something. You know, do it after the meeting. All right? Okay.
Thank you, Nick.
To what?
Who is they you're referring to?
The University Assembly.
Yeah.
And it's two. One of them has to be a GPSA member, the other one can be any graduate professional student.
Oh, yeah. That is an excellent point, by the way. Most of these positions do not have to be you specifically, although we should take the leadership on that. If you have a friend who says, I really am into Gord safety, like, by all means, you know, they can get involved. So, yeah.
One that's just
there's one.
There's another safety advisory. So, So,
thank you, Nate. Appropriations, or do you want to wait for your presentation, or you
can do it?
Okay. Communications, we don't currently have this person for. Finance Commission?
Only with you. Okay.
We're still looking for members. The deadline to apply for annual funding, as well as a special project request, is the last Friday of this month.
All right.
So if your club wants money and they haven't applied for an annual budget yet,
start prodding them.
Yeah.
Okay. Student Advocacy?
That's you. Hi, I'm Jason Bartel, and I'm the new chair of the Student Advocacy Committee. And so, moving forward, the Student Advocacy Committee has kind of fluctuated whenever there's a big issue everyone cares about, and then everyone kind of runs away when they don't care about it anymore. But historically, we've done some good things, so stuff like the workers' comp kind of moved through the Student Advocacy Committee. So what I'm looking to do this year in particular is to increase awareness of the advocacy committee, so tell your friends about it, and so if they have questions and they raise issues that you haven't heard anyone discuss, definitely have them come to us. And I'm also looking for you guys to join the committee and help with Nate's problem staffing a bunch of issues, because a lot of you have asked questions and raised issues when you ask questions of President Garrett. And she also addressed a lot of things that fall kind of under this advocacy general well-being umbrella, which is a very broad term and requires a lot of teamwork. And so hopefully moving forward, we can kind of bring that all onto one corralled area. If you have any questions, come see me afterwards, and I'll have a sign-up sheet for your emails and stuff.
Okay. So I think there's a breakout session where you learn about each committee, and the chairs will come by and talk to you about it. Yeah. We have time for that. So
yeah, there'll definitely be time for recruitment. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the big things I'm hoping to.
The assembly's websites are currently undergoing revision. Gina, do you want to address that?
Sure. I'm Gina Jamatis, the director of the Office of Assembly. If you have any questions about the website, I ask you to be patient. But one of the things that we'll actually be rolling out here this week is a portal for joining a committee. So, may I be working with you to make sure that we have all of the 165 committees that Grand Special Teams can join? And you would just go to a drop down, pick the committee list that you're interested in, put your name in there, and it would go directly to the chairman of that committee and Nate for oversight. And that should be available on the assembly's dashboard. So if you go to assembly.cornell.edu, there's all the way to the left of the top bar, you'll see a link for dashboard. And that's where we're putting all of the actions, all of the resolutions, public comment opportunities, and this committee list. So right now it's just for student assembly. By tomorrow afternoon, or probably by Wednesday, that should be for all age of assembly. Thank you.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, would that dashboard be available for all graduate and professional students to apply for a position in the committee?
It's a public site. Yeah, okay. Because everybody in the committee.
Excellent. And next, diversity and international students. Thank you. And finally, the programming board.
Hey, everyone. I'm Amy Mollis-Torres. I'm a second year at the Vet School, and I'm the new programming chair. One thing I am going to get done by the end of this week is I'm hoping to send out a survey to all the field representatives, if you could forward that on to your colleagues. And it's for ideas of what events you'd like to see happen this year. Our first inter-school mixer is on September 24th. but I haven't decided which schools are going to be invited to that. not yet. It definitely won't be the vet school because the second years have fall break day. But, if you could let me know if you have any ideas, and I would really appreciate if you forward on that survey to your colleagues in your department. And if you'd like to join the committee, just let me know. I also, one of the appointments that Nate has me going, appointing people to, is the Big Red Barn Advisory Committee. So if you'd like to be involved in that, let me know.
Thank you very much. All right, and so with this, we will move into new business. The first item of new business is the election of master's voting members. So the GPSA is comprised of 19 voting members. Two of these voting members are one-year master's students. To give master's students an opportunity to participate in GPSA as a voting member, since they don't have the luxury of waiting around to run for voting member at the end of the year. So, first of all, are there any one-year master's students here? Raise your hand. Okay. All right. So two of you will, one of these must be from one of the engineering programs. So at this time, are there any nominations or volunteers for the engineering one-year master's voting member?
Nominate yourself if you want.
Yeah.
I know it looks like it, but I'm not an engineer.
And by the way, all right. If there are no nominations volunteers for the engineering master's slot, then it will go to all one-year master's students. So now there are two available slots for at-large one-year master's students. Are there nominations or volunteers? Okay.
All right. Can we get your name?
Yeah, Ruben, and this is Khalid.
Hotel school?
Yeah.
Okay. Ruben, all right. Do you want to write some stuff?
So I'll point out as well that if you become elected, which it looks like will happen, as to a voting member position, you are no longer the field rep for your school.
Right. I figured that was like a preliminary step.
Right.
So at that point, should I not nominate and be the field rep?
Yes. There will be a vacant field rep slot, so you can bring someone else from your school in to fill that spot as a field rep.
Or find someone and elect and do the point thing. You can't transfer positions.
Okay.
Yeah. However your school decides that. Are there any other volunteers nominations? All right, so we have two people for two positions. So
it's always happy.
I believe we can then do an election by unanimous consent. Any opposition to electing Ruben and Khalid as one-year master's voting members? All right, seeing none, congratulations, you're officially elected as voting members. Please email Teja today so that he can make sure you're properly updated. Next item of business is the election of the Faculty Awards Chair. So the Faculty Awards Committee is probably
Daniel,
the...
You're on the AOC this time.
Oh, yeah. Daniel?
Do you want to talk about the Faculty Awards?
Just a general overview of what the chair's positions are.
I'm Daniel. I'm the emeritus chair of the Faculty Awards. It's all about enthusiastically and publicly recognizing the faculty members that do so much for us, the ones who go above and beyond to take care of their advisees or the people in their departments. I know my experience at Cornell is good because of the good graces of the faculty members who are looking out for me, so this award is certainly should go to them. So basically the way the committee works is we do nothing for like 6 months, and then starting in February, we start getting the word out, looking for nominees, and then we have one meeting to decide who the winners are, and then we throw a party for the winners. So, and we are looking for a new chair. I will be around this year, but we are looking for a new chair.
Okay. So, with that, Are there any questions for Daniel? All right. So, are there any nominations, volunteers for the position of Faculty Awards Chair? Again, you get to be a chair of a committee. It's probably one of the lowest stress level committees you can work on. You just read a bunch of letters that make you feel good about humanity for a change, and then throw a party. So.
And I won't make you join the external committee if you do it.
Okay. So, can we get a name? Okay. Are there any other nominations or volunteers? All right. Seeing none, then we will elect by unanimous consent. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, congratulations to our new faculty award. All right. So now we move on to the introduction of GPSA Resolution 1. Approving the GPSA charter and bylaws for 2015-2016 term. We are required to approve our charter and bylaws at the second meeting of every year. So these, we have two resolutions, but these are both for introduction, not for vote. They'll be introduced at this meeting and then voted on at our next meeting. And we should have some time for discussion at both meetings. So I'll turn it over to Nate for Resolution 1.
Okay, so if you've looked at the beginning part of this resolution and this is basically part, the other part of my responsibility is I'm supposed to look at the bylaws and the charter every year and make the updates and changes that, you know, we kind of need to function. We haven't updated in a while, and so part of our practice and part of our, has kind of, you know, wandered a little bit from strictly what the charter and the bylaws say. And so we're trying to do two things where we're trying to bring that a little bit more back in line. Either by rewriting the charter and the bylaws, changing some of the practices, and then as Tasia mentioned earlier, for years we've had this problem with communication, and we think elevating it to an officer-level position so that they can come to all the high-level meetings with the folks in the administration stuff will really make it better. So I've included all kinds of stuff, and in fact, I've made my own amendments to this since the one you've got out. I was changing it today. Dean Newth pointed out that because our general committee for the graduate school members are now voting members, that we would elect them the same way we will elect committee chairs, or so instead of being appointed by the operations and staffing committee. So that will is something that that I've since added in.
On top of the graduate committee?
Oh, graduate.
For the graduate school committee, what it is.
Oh, to get it. I'll have. Where's Sid? Sid here? You want to talk about the graduate committee? The general committee for the graduate school? And explain what that is?
Stephanie is always one of your. She's a current member.
but it's your post here.
Okay, I mean, so
that's the one we're going to vote
right,
on.
Right, so I've been on the general committee 2 years now. It is the committee that runs the grad school. So all the decisions that are like mainly to do with academics, like if they want to start a new graduate program, it has to go through the GC. The other things, like you get a lot of information about like the TARA, stipend rate differential, that was discussed in the general committee and I did give feedback. And that there are other things like that come up in the GC meeting that don't necessarily come up in the GPSA meeting, for example. Are a few things. and so this is a pretty powerful position and got more power recently because you can vote on them now and you can actually influence decision making at the university level. Jan, do you want to add anything else about the GC?
It's a position that we in the graduate school really value as an avenue for communication with the larger graduate community. So Sid and Stephanie have done a great job, and so we want somebody equally
And the way this position works is that you're appointed for 2 years, but it alternates. There's one in the even years and one in the odd years. So now we'll be filling only one position, and that person will be for 2 years. Tiffany is already in that position, and she'll continue on.
Yeah. So the way I've written the changes, and it's not in this resolution in your handout. We said those are recent ones I made today, but they'll be presented as an amendment at the next meeting. Is that we'll have one which will make the general committee position a voting position, or a position that we vote in as a group. And then the second one is to allow Tiffany to continue on for the duration of her term, so that would end at the end of this academic year. because as she was appointed, and then that will become a voting member position, so that way they're both staggered properly. Yes?
Did you know about how many meetings are?
It's once a month, and typically it's on Fridays or something like that.
It's based on the elected membership schedule, and it's once a month in the academic year, but not in January.
Okay, not in January.
Does everybody know where the GC is? You know, in 30 seconds, it's the elected by the faculty, faculty members, or graduate faculty members who represent all graduate faculty. Everybody know what the code of legislation is? Any policy, any legislation that impacts graduate school is first discussed and voted on by this group. We've always had two graduate student members, but as of last May, they became voting members. So anything that is a policy required for graduate students is discussed, voted, and approved by this body. So it's really important.
Okay, so any questions about that before I explain the next big thing in this resolution? Okay, so the second major thing is, like I said, is the VP for communications. That will be elected and it will become an officer position. They will automatically chair the communications committee. The other thing, which is, you can think of this as being separate, but this was an idea we had, and we'll put it in the resolution. If you guys hate it, we can amend it and change it or take it out or whatever. But what we're thinking of is that in the past, the communications chair has often been by themselves or only have one other person to support them. And we think it might be a good idea to have, when at the end of the year we do our normal electing of the voting members, the caucuses, the division caucuses, physical sciences, biological sciences, social sciences, and humanities, would also elect among themselves kind of a chief of communications for that whole division, and preferably a voting member. And that person, they would automatically go on the communications committee, and so they would help the communications chair, the VP for communications, disseminate information down to the field representatives, the voting members, and then the field organizations within that division. It was an idea. We thought that might work. It might not. That's why you guys are going to all be able to look at this. We'll have a couple weeks, and then we'll come back. If you have things you don't like or want to amend or change, you can email me, and I will put it in there. I'll add everyone's amendment, and then we discuss them all. It's a very formal process. My email is ngr27. So.
Did anyone not get a copy of the resolution?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Point of information.
Yeah.
And if you want us to email you potential changes, which are going to not be introduced to the document, but introduced as their own separate.
They would be, at this point, I think they'd be introduced as amendments.
They would have to be introduced.
They would be introduced.
Do you want us to email you proposed amendments ahead of time, or just bring them up either now or next meeting?
I think if you know what you want to, if you know what your amendment is, email it to me ahead of time, because then I can put them all in at once before the meeting, and that will save us some time, I think. But we will discuss each one individually in the meeting. So, yeah.
Other than grammar, I think that we can just go with one.
It's now been presented, so even that has to be voted on at this point.
Yeah.
Right. No, sure. I'm saying we can do that as one single amendment for all
grammatical. So if you have grammatical changes, I'm going to mesh all the grammar into one amendment because we can't do 30 of those again.
Please send grammar corrections ahead of time.
If the grammar changes are like friendly to your amendment, do we need an amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, we've normally operated. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Excellent. Thanks.
All right. So now, like I said, that resolution will be discussed again and voted on at our next regularly scheduled meeting. And so we'll move on to our next item of business, which is GPSA Resolution 2, Resolution Approving GPSA Budget for the 2015-2016 academic year. And I'll hand it over to Sid.
I'm Siddharth. I'm the chair of the Appropriations Committee, and that makes me default chair of the treasurer for the GPSA. There are two things. Before I start, a quick update from the Appropriations Committee. This year is an activity fee setting year, which means we will be meeting with a lot of the Biden funding organizations. The application for the Biden funding organizations are due on September 11th, which is not this Friday, but next Friday. The the final, like, what the allocation should be or what we recommend will be presented by the fifth meeting. We still have to work out which exact meeting it will be presented at, but you will hear more about it. It will probably take a meeting or maybe even two meetings to approve that. And for that, I would require, or we would require, all the voting members to be present. And so that's something the voting members should be aware of before they begin, because without that, it won't pass through.
Just to give a new members an idea, this is basically set the activity fee. So we are trying to determine the budgets and the, how much the byline organizations are going to need, and then on the basis of that, determine how much to charge as activity fee. So that's why it's sort of important.
I can make a more detailed presentation in 1 or 2 weeks. I mean, at one of the other meetings, so that we don't waste much time today. But anyway, we have questions.
Oh, yeah. So is the amount we set, is that, can that be changed later on by somebody above us in the administration?
No. It's set by us. We have to approve what change is, and it's for 2 years. And it cannot change in those 2 years. Unless there is a byline funding organization that removes itself from funding, that has happened in the past, but then it's complicated, but something works.
Just to clarify, the Board of Trustees set the range that this would have to fall into. So they actually set the parameters for it, but then it's up to the body to adopt.
Lucia?
Yeah.
So I was on the website last week, and the link to pre-application is still up, but the form itself is not up.
So there is no final form. It's just you have to attach a PDF with all the budget information. So I mean, it's a pretty open application. It's not something that is very. It makes a difference because the programming board, even though it's a committee under the GPSA, it's actually a byline funded organization, so they have to submit a full budget of what they have done in the past three years, and what they plan to do in the next year. I mean, I'll get into more detail. I mean, if you have any questions, you can come and talk to me. I don't want to waste too much time on that.
But just to verify, it's only there's not a legit meeting.
There is nothing. You should make the application is already open. You just have to go and click and submit.
Okay.
Okay. With that, let's start the internal budget.
Yeah.
Okay,
I got you.
I can do
it. Yeah, I thought you had a clicker in your hand. That's why I'm getting. Okay.
Is there a clicker?
No.
Okay, I can stand there. To start, I want to quickly summarize what we had from last year. This I got from Gina. So essentially, at the beginning of last year, we got a rollover about $15,000. With the current operating budget, that is like the allocation that was given to the GPSA, we got about 12,000. And all that put in, it works out to be about 29,000. That was the amount we had last year, out of which we used up about 10,000 last time. Our allocation is about 12. We ended up using only 10,000, and we ended up with a rollover of about $19,000, which will carry on to this year, and it'll add on to this year's budget, which we will use for this year. For this year, the GPSA's allocation is $1.95 per student. I don't know the exact student number, so I mean it's an approximate figure. It's going to be about 13,000. The exact number is slightly complicated because there is Cornell Tech and that allocation comes to us and then we have to send it back to them. We're working on that. All put together, it's going to be about $32,000, in which we are not going to allocate all $32,000 because we have certain plans for this year, which might bring up, like if you want to support like the grocery store, or if you want to start like have mics or something at this meeting so that we can be heard better. There are incidental expenses that will pop up, and we want to leave some money for that. And we might form new committees. Like if there's something that is pressing that comes up, in the past we've had things where you need $3,000 for a committee and then where do I go for that money? And that comes from the rollover. And so typically what we will try to do is try to keep the funding allocation at the level at what we get in. So that's going to be about 13,000. So it's going to be about 14,000, 15,000 at max. This was, I requested all the committee chairs at the end of last year to tell me how much they would need for this year, and based on that, we've reallocated the budget. So there is the thing that if there is a previous rollover, which we have, which is 19,000, what do we do with it? And we have to discuss about that later. And there will be things that will come up because of that. There is one thing that I want to bring up, which is the second point. If there are large events that any of the committees are planning, which I've heard that a couple of committees have these large events where they're going to spend a lot of money, come and talk to me before you do that, because there is a limited amount of resource and there is some guidelines for it. The money that we get into the GPSA, it has no restrictions, but we are a student organization and we should be, we can't spend $50 per person on a meal. That's ridiculous because no other student group gets that kind of funding. So we have to be careful about how much money each committee spends, and that's why if there's a large event where you're thinking about more than $500, or then come talk to me so that we can figure out how and where, if that is reasonable or not. So based on this, this is the allocation. So about $7,000 goes towards the administrative fund, which is basically all the meetings, all the food that we get at all the general GPSA meetings. That comes from the administrative. Last year we spent about $6,500 or $7,000 on it, so I'm allocating $7,100, and that is keeping in line with what we had last year. Communications is $500. It was $50 something last year, and I'm pushing it up this year because we're going to have a new VP for communication. But if we need more money, we can talk about it and how we can program. Operations staffing, they don't...
One meeting.
One meeting, so that's $50. Appropriations, this time we'll have a lot of meetings, so we got $350. Is there any questions from anyone? I can keep reading the numbers, but
if you can find your numbers and just explain it.
And so based on this, you see the total allocation? Yes. Richard, do you want to explain?
So the NAGPS is the National Association of Graduate Professional Students. It's basically the GPSA nationwide, and we are members of that. And so... We send representatives to their national meeting. I believe it's once a year, and so we allocate some funds to help cover that expense. And so actually we will be looking for, and I don't have a date for this as of yet, but we will be looking for volunteers to attend this meeting. If you are interested and want to represent Cornell at this level, please come talk to us. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a conference of nothing but graduate students, so it's, you know, a good time, a lot of great networking opportunities, that's the NAGPS.
Okay,
the Ivy Summit.
Oh, and there's also the Ivy Summit, which that is another conference of the eight Ivy Leagues plus MIT who get together once a year, and that's another.
Is Chicago too?
What?
I think it's Chicago.
No, we don't include them because for us it's more of a regional concern. It's a lot easier to get the nine in the peer group that we have set for ourselves together because we're all, you know, within driving distance of each other, though Dartmouth is questionable as to driving distance. And so that's the Ivy Summit and why that allocation is there. And for that one, it's typically the executive board or executive committee, sorry. Unless someone from the executive committee can't make it, in which case we open it up to other members, because it's, again, another good networking opportunity. So, but it's lower than NAGPS simply because we drive there and all we have to pay for is the hotel room.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Okay, so just as a clarification, I know that this is the point of confusion I had. So this is our internal budget. So basically the amount of money it takes to run the assembly and the committees of the assembly. Right? So this is just a fraction of the actual activity fee. The rest of the money goes to byline-funded organizations that Sid talked about. A large part of it also goes to the Finance Commission, which then gives it out to all the other student clubs out there. So just as a clarification, this is our internal budget for internal committees. Things like pay for food, advertising for your committees, your committees going to host an event, things like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
any other questions?
Motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
Seconded.
All right. We'll do a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So very enthusiastic. Okay. So thank you, Sid. And yeah, we will be voting on these two resolutions at our next meeting. So now we will go in and we'll restrict this to 10 minutes for our breakout session. For this is an opportunity to learn about the committees from the committee chairs. So we will divide up the room. Let's see, we have six committees, and I guess easy enough, these two will be a different section, and then we'll have about we divide this one into the lower half, and then the top half we'll divide into left and right as of the third row.
Yeah, it's just a way for people to address
six
people as opposed to the entire room.
Yeah.
We have the committee chairs stand up and maybe go to
the spot. Yeah, the committee chairs come to the front, and then, so sort of just like, we'll have like that upper right corner, that upper left corner, the lower section, and the middle section, and then the two side sections. So whichever one you feel. Faculty awards. Yeah,
you can walk with Daniel. I mean, yeah. I feel like. Oh, you were on the committee. Okay.
Yeah. And so, excuse me. So the people will stay in place and ask the committee chairs to migrate around after you've done. You can talk to them, and then sort of move around the room after you've talked to a group. So, all right.
Also, point of information: we do have a sign-in sheet, so you do sign in before you leave.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody heard you.
Hey, Ruben.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, thank you.
Ruben. Stacey, nice to meet you in person. Hi, Ruben. Just appreciate the back and forth. That was much faster to voting than I just...
We usually call them back to because we can't find the agenda board out of every insurance
podcast. Right.
Because most of the way we communicate is to field.
Right.
So...
We could reach out beyond the field, and then I was like, well, maybe we'll see. There's voting in the face. That's money it worked out for both of us.
Yeah.
You know, so,
there we go. Cool. We'll get you my card. And, you can, So basically, the difference between a voting member and a field rep is that voting members get to vote on resolution. Usually, voting members get preference in who gets to.
All of those votes are handled. Like, in these types of meetings, right? On that one.
Are there any committees or ways to get
services to help student life? Is there any type of committee that even just like proposes these?
So basically, anybody can propose a resolution, and we'll just take a vote and forward it to anybody who wants it. So. Nobody signed today. You guys want to talk to me?
These are everyone.
Actually, a lot of things we do is in the resolution form. But what we can also do is we can talk about
looking forward to
the presentation and talk about the planning and so forth. They meet often with things like that.
There's usually a few things.
We talk about things like planning.
Some of them are
surviving.
So that's
such a voting.
And I know that, for example, there's a big project going on rejuvenating like signage and culture around campus because it's all very
and so there will be opportunities to voice anything. Ideas.
Every time you want an idea, you bring it up and make it quiet.
It's a safe thing.
If your name is not in the sign-in sheet, just pencil it in.
Are we on this for this?
You should be. He should be. You probably are not. It'll be unassigned or something. You can just write pencil your name in.
Here.
Yeah, just sign.
Check, signature.
Signature.
A mark.
Yep. Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm the new AMA field rep.
Oh, right. Hi.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Paige. I just introduced
you.
You were.
put on like last minute?
Yeah, I decided that I was doing the field draft last
okay.
Friday.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I just found out about it today, so I decided to.
No, that's perfect. Have a good time.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome to GPSA.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Richard. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, you did? Okay, what can we do?
The dining services?
Okay.
Yeah.
Want a diamond? Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. That's easy.
Okay, that's great. Actually, dining is a very music concern.
Yeah.
You should go.
So, yeah. Yeah, you are in the right place. Yeah, so Nate, sorry, he's right there, yeah. So grab him. I'm going to be excited to hear your excited story.
Yeah, I'm voting on the changes. The only thing is, actually, we're going to be expecting to get the chair.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you want to run for...
We're only 1 year away.
So, I mean, just like...
Yeah.
Do you want to take one?
Okay, perfect.
Thank you. I know, what is it?
I would have probably put you in one of your fields, one of the five, maybe compared to biomedical science, because we don't have one single field for you yet. If you're still five, so I think you might be on the comparative biomedical science.
Yeah, that's what my car is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry for pharmacology. What are you? I know, but what are you right now? You're pharmacology, yeah. I thought so. Sorry.
It's
probably by last name.
Yeah.
No, it's by
field.
Nobody likes the girl.
It's not very different than general.
Well, not kidding. Maybe it's my girl.
Yeah, okay. So in the winter when we all have the flu, we'll just be like really close. Everyone will get sick real fast. Sorry, we're going to be sick anyway. Alright.
Everyone, we'll be reconvening in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh no, Cheng Li. Give people 2 more minutes.
So how we sign up for the conference?
What?
The other conference?
Oh, that's just email me.
I'll do that.
Yeah, and do email because I'll forget me.
And I'll email to be back up for Friday.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Good to know.
I feel like you bring it.
All right. All right, everyone. We're going to go ahead and reconvene. If you still want to chat with the committee chairs, then you can track them down. Nate can be happy to get you in touch with them. So for now, let's reconvene for just 2 more minutes, and then we'll adjourn. And those shrimp blow one.
Yeah.
All right. So this,
yeah.
So we'll go ahead and now progress into our final item of business, which is open forum. So we end every meeting with allowing anyone who wishes to address the assembly to address the assembly. So is there anything for open forum?
I have one thing. So tomorrow, if I hope everyone's heard about it, Bear Walk is going on tomorrow afternoon/evening. It's going to be a pretty big thing. They're going to close College Avenue from Oak to Dryden for like 5 hours. There's going to be like 20 tables. It's going to be a big party with the city and the university, and there's going to be all kinds of information about like trying to be better neighbors and promote a better like environment within College Town specifically, but also like in the community as well. So there's going to be the marching band. There's going to be free ice cream from the Cornell Dairy. That's a big thing. Plus, the a cappella groups are going to sing. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. So I would encourage you to stop by. I think the info fair starts at 6:30, I want to say, up there. So definitely please come to that.
Can you say the link where?
It's going to be to College Avenue between College Town Bagels and Starbucks at around, starting I think around 6:30. And it's going to go for about 3 hours. Or 2 hours.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So free ice cream tomorrow.
The ice cream, I think it's closer to the end. I think it's closer to the 8:30. I think the band is closer to the beginning. So. I have no idea what they've got planned for that.
You need to at least come and look. They're making you search for the ice cream.
Second.
Oh, that's the
since you're plugging different things, the President Garrett's inauguration is September 17th and 18th. We are looking for volunteers. There's a whole slew of different events happening over the course of those 2 days. If you go to the inauguration website, there's a portal for volunteering. We appreciate your help. We appreciate your spreading the word that there is there are volunteers necessary. So, thank you. I sure will. Thank you very much. You can actually, she's very accessible too. If you'd like to send her that note, she'd appreciate your info.
Yes, this is the room we are in. Unfortunately, there was a conflict with a class in Malott Hall. I understand it's warm, but Gene and I can speak afterwards to see if what other options might be available, which is why you saw that there was a lot of to-be-determined dates to sort of figure out how well the space worked for us. Yeah, like one more meeting will be at this temperature, and then we'll be hoping that this building has heat. So anyway, but yes, this is our
I've got an update from the CGSU GPSA working group. So there was a working group formed last year to work on the relationship between the union and GPSA. We produced a memorandum of understanding, and this is going to be submitted to the GPSA for consideration. CGSU also need to approve this. But I just thought I should sort of talk about the purpose and scope very briefly. This is the language. GPSA and CGSU agree that their relationship is of utmost importance to both organisations. As graduate and professional student leaders from student governments and graduate labour advocacy groups, it is our responsibility to work together to achieve better results for all of our constituents. Members of both organisations will benefit from increased communication between the two bodies. So then there's some points for what GPSA will do and what CGSU will do. We have some good progress with the working group, and I think we're close to submitting the final copy, so look out for that in future meetings.
Thank you. Yep. Is there a second? All right, we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.